Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host, David Weinberg.
I'm also half full.
Today, we're talking about a special category of drinks, bartender drinks. Well, you might be asking, aren't all drinks bartender drinks? We're specifically talking about the drinks that bartenders like to make for themselves and their fellow bartenders.
And any lucky bystanders who happen to be pleasant enough to be invited to have one with the bartender.
We've seen this over and over again where, you know, for whatever reason, you know, bartenders start mixing up something for each other or at a certain bar.
Or they start reaching for a dusty bottle on the back of the bar that nobody's touched in 20 years.
Absolutely.
And suddenly the next thing they know, their supplier is getting an order for 10 of those.
Right. One of the stories that I think of first is we don't think of it now as a bartender drink, and I wouldn't suggest ordering most bartenders a cosmopolitan, but the origins of the modern cosmopolitan sort of start as a bartender drink.
So,
you know, according to lore, or, you know, I think it's pretty well documented, Toby Cuccini's working, a New York bartender working at the Odeon in Tribeca, which was a super hip location. That's on the cover of Jay McInerney's.
It was the first hipster restaurant, you know?
Absolutely. It's on the cover of Jay McInerney's book, the paperback edition, Bright Lights, Big City. Toby's working there, you know, hears about a drink called the Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, I think it probably came from San Francisco by the time it got to Tribeca.
You know, it wasn't particularly good, you know, particularly popular. For whatever reason, Toby's a very curious kind of guy, started messing with it just for fun.
It wasn't a drink that customers were ordering. It was a drink that was kind of like a little bartender thing.
Yeah.
What was cool about it was it had a great color, and unlike the things that customers were ordering, it came in a cocktail glass. It was straight up. It wasn't a highball. It wasn't a juice drink. It wasn't a Bloody Mary or a white wine spritzer that people were drinking at the time. And unlike the old people's martinis, it was pink. You know, it had some color to it.
And maybe an easier to drink, you know, for a generation that wasn't, you know, used to drink
cocktails.
It didn't
really want a whole glass of lukewarm gin.
Exactly. And cool color, a little bit of mixology, a bit of sophistication.
Well, I mean, you remember what the color palette was back in the early 80s. Everything was like pink and turquoise.
Absolutely.
I was a musician back then. I remember going to the Notorious Antenna Club in Memphis, playing a gig there. That was like the greatest punk club in the Mid-South. And they gave us their t-shirts that were pink and black, you know, and it was like, okay, that was cool.
Right. You know,
that was the color. And so the Cosmopolitan was, that was just absolutely perfect.
It follows like kind of that perfect arc. Starts as a drink just for the staff of the restaurant, bartenders, the regulars start seeing the staff drink, you know, is the type of place where even if you weren't working, you still wanted to hang out there because it was cool. And, you know, you get the regulars who aren't in the business start seeing servers drinking it, bartenders, the chefs drinking it, then they want to drink it. And suddenly everybody is drinking the Cosmo.
Yeah.
And it goes, you know, it jumps from, you know, just the Odeon because it's such a hot place to all types of restaurants and bars.
Jumps to the Rainbow Room where Dale DeGroff tinkers with it on his own.
Famously makes it for Madonna at a party.
Yep. And then she's drinking Cosmopolitans on national TV or talking about them. And it's like suddenly everybody wants to drink that.
I think that may be the most extreme example of a bartender drink going mass.
There's some others that are kind of close. There are a lot of like those dusty old bottles. I think of Fernet Branca. You know, which you got to go out to San Francisco. And Fernet Branca, my father was Italian. I spent a lot of time over there as a kid. And that was the kind of thing you would get if you had a stomach ache.
Right.
It was not a recreational drink.
No.
Fernet Branca is dark, bitter, intense, pungent, sweet. It's a digestive bitter.
And it was created as like a cure-all for like spleen pain, from what I remember.
That's funny, yeah.
So like, I mean, it was literally...
It was medicinal.
It tastes slightly medicinal.
Yeah, and in Italy, it's taken as medicine. However, you get out to San Francisco in around late 90s, something like that.
Yeah, early 2000s.
Yeah, and the bartenders there, especially in Rico's Italian restaurant, as far as I know, that's where the Fernet thing got started. I could be wrong about that. But there are a couple of these old line Italian restaurants, and the old customers are having little shots of Fernet after their meals. And some of the bartenders get to tasting this, and the stuff is hard to take. And that's another kind of facet of bartenders' drinks, is there's this thing is like, oh, you won't like it, so we're going to like it. You know, it's like the customers.
This isn't for everybody.
This isn't for everybody. And so they start doing shots of Fernet. It starts to spread to the other bars, and it becomes kind of the bartender's secret handshake.
Sure.
You walk into a bar, especially late in the evening, and you sit down there, and the bartender says, what'll it be? You say, I'll have a shot of Fernet. And they're like, all right, you're in on this joke here.
Or if you're in the industry, you walk in. I know this happens to you. And suddenly, before you can even order a drink, there are shots of Fernet on the bar for you.
On the bar in front of you. Do you drink it or don't you drink it?
I mean, you have to, I think.
You have to. But I mean, early on, it was like it was a little bit of a challenge.
For a while, you know, maybe about 10 years ago, employees only in New York was the number one account for Fernet Branca. They had had a cocktail called the Fernando on their menu, and they took it off because nobody ordered it. Like, nobody wanted a cocktail with Fernet. So who was drinking all the Fernet? Well, all the bartenders who would hang out, employees only, every time they came in, they would be poured a shot of Fernet. So all the, you know, the staff and all their guests literally were drinking enough Fernet.
That's amazing.
Which probably wasn't, you know, a ton, because, you know, you could easily probably be the number one account in New York.
Yeah, it didn't take a lot of work.
But it's still, if you figure out how many shots of that they were drinking, you know, as an industry drink, it's kind of amazing.
This idea goes to Chicago, and the bartenders there look around, and they see Malort, which is like Fernet on acid. It's super bitter, based on a Swedish bitter, Beska Droppar, which is wormwood in alcohol. So it's, and wormwood's about the most bitter thing imaginable.
Yeah.
And this stuff, Malort, is like Fernet's ugly, mean cousin. So they start giving people shots of Malort, and then they'll take your picture as you're drinking it, you know, to get your Malort face.
Right.
And that's like, that's kind of the extreme of this stuff.
I'm not sure we can, you know, I'm not sure if we can totally connect the modern kind of Amaro boom with these, you know, the Fernet and the Malort, but I think that it helps, you know, it definitely helps. I mean, obviously now, you know, there's a, you know, all types of people are drinking Amaros, you know, sipping them, not necessarily.
Now
thinking.
You've got like on the New York City subway last year, they had an ad campaign, you know, beautiful underdressed women walking alligators out of bars and with Fernet branding all over. And it's like, wow, you've gotten to the point where you're advertising in the subways. That's a little
changed
crazy.
A little.
Yeah, that's changed a little bit.
You're right, man. It's another example of what was a, you know, bartender drink becoming, you know, kind of mass, or at least, you know, maybe not everybody's drinking Amaros now, but all the foodies, you know, all of the people
they're nuts about
all the chefs, all of these, you go to all these food and wine festivals and, you know, all these people, you know, are drinking Amaros.
Well, that's what happened with bourbon, which was nearly dead. And it got resurrected from those people. It didn't get resurrected from the heartland. It got resurrected from the cities.
Sure.
From chefs and foodies, you know.
Japan.
Kinda,
I mean,
and Japan. And,
it's interesting to look almost like an epidemiologist following, you know, a disease and how it spreads and where's patient zero and what's, you know, how does this thing radiate out?
Well, you could see it happening right now with the daiquiri, right?
Yeah.
So this is another class of these drinks, is ones that were formerly popular and that kind of got forgotten or cheapened up.
Right.
The bartenders, as their secret handshake, are kind of doing the revived version. I think it started with the Aviation, which was a forgotten drink around 2000. It involved two obscure ingredients, or well, gin was semi-obscure at that
point. Whole thing was obscure.
Gin, nobody was drinking gin, right. You know, except for old people drinking martinis.
Right.
And maraschino was or really obscure. Drinking,
gin and juice, maybe.
Yeah. There were some constituencies. Gin was not sexy.
Right.
And maraschino was almost unknown, maraschino liqueur. People were like, what? You had to go quite a ways to find it. Those two things plus lemon juice. And that became kind of a bartender secret handshake is you right. walk into a bar and say, I'll have an aviation. And they go, oh.
And that was a pretty hard drink to drink. I mean, I remember even for myself.
Strong.
And at that time, the signature color, we didn't have it. I mean, back in the day, the aviation was a beautiful violet color.
We didn't know that until I accidentally bought a cocktail book off of eBay around 2004 that had the original recipe. It said it had creme de violette in it.
Right.
I put that up on eGullet saying, look what I found. And everybody said, oh, creme de violette. Where do we get that?
That's a perfect example because that changes the whole nature of that drink.
Oh, it does.
Makes it, in my opinion at least, a lot more drinkable once you add the violet liqueur.
You got to be careful about it, though.
But it rounds it out. It's not as bitter. But the original one, I didn't really care for it without...
A lot of people didn't, but that was kind of the point.
But that was the point. I mean, and you had all these bartenders who were like, this is an amazing drink. And we were even making it correctly. And this drink, especially depending upon where you went, was almost undrinkably bitter. You know what I mean?
It was weird tasting. Well, because you use the best maraschino, Luxardo's very pungent.
Right.
You have to be very careful in balancing it. And people were just splashing it in.
Absolutely.
In like ridiculous amounts. It's like, oh, let me put 3/4 of an ounce of this
and
stuff
it, and
in
it
there.
And it became like a point of pride. Like, this is my drink. And in some ways, I have to say it, a Negroni has sort of followed a similar path where a lot of bartenders discovered it's obviously bitter, you know, category of drinks. It's, you know, the traditional recipe is one.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
One part gin, one part sweet vermouth, one part Campari.
I mean, I remember drinking those in Italy in the early 80s, and you come to America, and only in, like, the most serious Italian restaurants would they do it. And then they'd have to get the recipe off the back of the Campari bottle, you know.
Definitely, like, a period, like, in the 70s, 80s, where people were drinking maybe Cinzano or Dubonnet or Martini and Rossi, but usually on the rocks.
Yeah,
right?
And they weren't drinking this like... Three ingredient drink? That was complicated.
No, this is, you know, club soda if you were lucky.
Yeah.
You know, Cinzano and ice and maybe an orange peel. And that was the height of sophistication.
Negroni was like, you could only get it in Italian restaurants. No, you couldn't get it anywhere else.
Traditionally, right? I mean, you better than anybody could tell us is generally an aperitivo cocktail, right? I mean,
it's a late afternoon drink. In Italy, it's like the kind of thing you're sitting in a cafe at 6 o'clock and they bring you out a little dish of potato chips and a dish of olives and your Negroni. Although lately, over the last 15 years, it's been replaced entirely by the Aperol Spritz over there.
Interesting.
Because the Italians want things with less alcohol, not more.
Right.
The Negroni has more alcohol. But that was originally what it was. It was like a before going to dinner drink.
Yeah.
It would be served on the rocks with a splash of soda and a huge wedge of orange.
Right. It's funny because as it turned into a bartender drink. I remember seeing it very early on in San Francisco. You would find bartenders or the early cocktail geeks, you know, who were onto the Negroni, and they were having it all night long.
Yeah.
And they were having, you know, not one, you know, like an Italian,
they'd
you know,
like six.
Right. And you're like, wow, that's hardcore.
Yeah.
And it was almost like, I can handle this much bitter.
Yeah. I can handle more bitter than you can.
Right. They start tinkering with the recipe. Some people want it. It's too sweet. We want it more bitter.
Yeah.
Like dialing down the vermouth, increasing the quotient of Campari. Obviously, Campari loves that.
Because
people are using more.
Yeah. And gin also, you know, gin was the other hip ingredient in there. So
right.
It was like it had bitters in it. It had gin in it.
It checked every box. have some, you know, new, cool, imported vermouth. You have the bitter Campari. You have some boutique gin or, you know, something like Plymouth or Tanqueray. And suddenly, you know, it's the perfect cocktail for bartenders and also marketers, too.
Until it kind of got kicked off by mezcal.
Right.
But then people are starting to make mezcal Negronis.
Right.
You know, so it's like, oh.
Like a Venn diagram of bartender. Funny. But you're right. I think Steve Olson, you know, definitely.
And Ron Cooper, obviously.
Right, with Del Maguey and Misty.
Yeah, these people are going around pushing this absolutely lovely, not pushing it salesman-like, but just showing up, pouring bartender shots.
At the beginning, I think just begging people. Literally, forget about being pushy. Just literally, like,
try
listen,
this.
It doesn't come with the worm. It never actually came with the worm, but you got to try this.
Yeah, you got to try
it's
this.
It's amazing.
It's different from tequila.
Just give me 5 minutes, 5 minutes of your time. I mean, again, it had the perfect characteristics for a bartender drink. It was kind of funky.
Yeah.
A lot of people were turned off by it. You know, it had an interesting story. It has real tradition.
There's a learning curve.
History, learning curve. You know, you could definitely go down
and
like a rabbit
delicious.
Hole. And delicious.
Like Negronis or, you know, even in its own weird, awkward way, Fernet.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to leave Malort out of this because I have to, but... There's one that's like surfacing now, which used to be about the most popular drink in the land and then fell on hard times, is the daiquiri.
Right.
Which got, you know, prostituted.
I can't tell you. I mean, I will make daiquiris for anybody. I love it. And almost every time somebody says, oh, do you need a blender for this?
Yeah,
do you need a blender
for
this? Oh, I thought this was going to be the frozen daiquiri that you're making us. What is it? I've never had this.
For bartenders, once they started working in craft cocktail bars,
right.
The ones who had really, I think, good palates started noticing that some of these simple drinks are kind of perfect.
Absolutely.
And if you take fresh squeezed lime juice and sugar, or I prefer sugar. Some people use syrup. But
even agave nectar can work.
Yeah, I still prefer the sugar. Yeah. You know, the old Cuban style. And you have to have a good white rum, a really good flavorful white rum. And you shake that up with ice strain it into a glass. It's just amazing.
Do you ever use dark rum or you?
Not for a daiquiri. I'll use it. If I'm using dark rum, I might throw some bitters in there or a splash of liqueur. I'll make it a little into something else. I really like just the original three-ingredient drink.
But it's interesting. I feel like even the daiquiri, some bars have put I'll just call it a bartender spin.
Of course they have.
Where, like, you know, you have a bar, Blacktail, you know, at the tip of Manhattan, which you know, is highly acclaimed from the Dead Rabbit folks. And their daiquiri, the sugar, it's not that sweet. It's definitely dialed back. It's more of like a citrusy punch with more of the rum, you know, forward.
And that's more Cuban style, although they always add touches.
Yeah.
You know, they've got dashes of this and that.
Absolutely.
Just to kind of massage the flavor a little bit. If you get a good white rum, if you're abroad and you can get the Cuban Havana Club 3-year-old, that's
go for it.
That's very good in this. There are plenty of other good flavorful ones.
We obviously did a whole episode on Cuba and its wonderful cocktails, including the daiquiris. So
absolutely.
Listen to that if you haven't listened to it already.
We go into much more detail on that.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is a drink that bartenders have started doing daiquiri timeouts where they'll shake up like there's six people behind the bar. They'll shake up three daiquiris and split it into like six little cups. And suddenly they'll, you know, ring a bell or something and all the bartenders will drop what they're doing and run and have a quick shot of daiquiri just to like kind of buck you up.
Yeah.
But that's going to be more popular with the general population.
Yeah,
that's going to get out, I think.
I kind of see it as something like the Moscow Mule or some of these other drinks where, you know, they're so delicious, but they're also so easy to make.
Yeah.
And once people realize that, and then they kind of take ownership of that, then they can start to make it at home.
The daiquiri takes a little bit of skill and taste to balance it. So I think that's why it's become a bartender thing is like the pride is not that I can make one. It's that I can make a good one.
Right.
It's a simple drink. It's only got three ingredients.
Yeah.
But that also means there's nowhere to hide.
Right. Well, I kind of love the idea of instead of doing like a shot of whiskey or, I don't know, vodka or tequila or whatever, that instead you're doing a shot of daiquiri. You know, it's your service shot. The bartender's drinking
and
that.
It's just kind of, it's kind of fun. It's become definitely like the latest of the kind of the industry go-to drinks, the bartender's favorite.
That's always one of my favorite questions to ask different bartenders in different cities, like, what's the staff drink at the end of the night? Like, what do you guys, and it obviously changes. I mean, there's no one answer.
No, there never is.
And every bar culture has its own, sort of end of shift drink or shot. But it's always such a fascinating thing to see as it goes from one bar to the next. And I remember years ago talking to somebody, I think it was about the liqueur Tuaca, which comes from like South Africa. And it's not, not incredibly popular here. And at the time it was owned by Brown-Forman. Now it's owned by Sazerac. But, one of the reports from one of their distributors, it suddenly blew up. They had no idea why, right? Yeah. They had done nothing, different. Suddenly case sales have blown through the roof. Wait, this has to be a mistake.
Yeah.
What's going on there, right? Call up. Nobody knows. Okay, who knows? A couple months later, same thing happens in a different town. Like, okay, we got to get to the bottom of what's going on here. And what had happened was some bartender had come up with a frozen shot using Tuaca. It had become very popular with the staff, the people there. Then he moved. He moved town. And it happened again. And it was one of those things where cocktail history, there are all those missteps things.
Exactly.
And if things had worked out slightly differently, we could all be drinking Tuaca frozen shots for 10 years.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That could have been the fireball of 1998 or whatever it was. For whatever reason, never caught on the mainstream. But it's interesting to see how these things start.
Well, I mean, bartenders are the front line, and to this day, they still make trends.
Yeah.
That Cajun martini was a national thing from K-Paul's because it went to bars and it became a bartender shot. I remember at the Great Jones Cafe, the New York City institution, been open since 83. That was on their, the opening thing.
Right.
They had that behind the bar and it was like only for those in the know, like the bartender. if the bartender bought you a drink.
That's what it was.
They might buy you one of those. It's like, here, try this.
It was amazing. I mean, Paul Prudhon, his blackened fish started its own trend,
Yeah, exactly. And the Cajun martini is basically gin or vodka, mostly vodka by the time it got to New York. A couple drops of vermouth and a jalapeno pepper, like soaked in the bottle and taken out after a few hours. Nasty for hangovers.
Yeah. I can only
imagine.
It had
a very bad way of repeating on you.
Right, right.
But on the other hand, it was kind of tasty.
Is there one drink that you'd like to see as sort of the next bartender drink? Is there one?
Ooh, that's a good question. Yeah, I'd like to see people drinking Arak.
Arak?
Like Batavia Arak shots.
It's so bizarre and out there. I mean, you want to talk a little bit about what it is?
I mean, it's from Indonesia via the Netherlands, who used to, be in charge of Indonesia. It was their colony.
Right.
So the trade all goes through Amsterdam.
It shows up in a lot of old punch recipes.
It's made from sugar cane and a little bit of rice in traditional distilleries down there and aged and blended in Amsterdam.
It checks every box, I think.
Oh, yeah.
For
it's weird. It's funky. It's very pungent. It's got a lot of flavor.
Big history.
History. And
well, if this starts, you heard it here first that the Batavia Arak, if you suddenly see all your bartenders.
If you see your bartenders putting shots out for everybody saying, Arak attack, Arak attack, Arak attack, where it came from.
If this happens, everybody owes you a Batavia Arak shot at every bar that you walk into. I think this concludes another episode of Life Behind Bars. Ask your bartender what they like to drink as their final drink, and maybe you'll get to enjoy one with them.
Yeah, if it's slow and you're nice.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.